Welcome to Development Dynamics, the conversation, storytelling, and reflection platform that Development Dynamics offers to leaders and practitioners who are doing social good, who are having social impact in and around the African continent. We are very glad this time around to be featuring one of my dearest people that I know and I've known for the last 10 or 15 years. He's a leader of the present and a leader of the future. He has raised, when I say raised, I mean handheld from beginning to where people are, various individuals. He is director of two organizations, one as a non-executive director and the other one as the current director, which is Lepta Community and Mathare Children's Education. He has also worked in the development space for a number of years with initiatives that he has co-founded and other initiatives where he has worked either as an employee or as a partner in various ways. He is a father, a husband, and also most importantly, an African man, John Ngari Ndorere. Welcome to DD with Maxi, Development Dynamics. We are really glad to finally be doing this and really happy that you honored the invite, really humbled that you get to spend time with us and our audience sharing and reflecting back on your journey. So, karibu sana.
Thank you for having me.
We are super excited to have you. And I've called you John Ngari Ndorere. I would like us to begin with your roots, your farm foundations, so to call them.
Yeah.
Where does Ndorere hail from?
So Ndorere the man hails from Nyeri, near the Abadeas, where he was born and raised. He later moved to Nyandaro.
Moved in pursuit of a wife? Or in
Ndorere moved to Nyandaro to follow his father, Mr. Ngari.
All right.
Who was working as a rancher in a white settler's land near the plains of Wanjohi.
Wanjohi is in Nyandarua.
Yes.
Just for contextualizing, is Nyandarua where Laikipia is?
Nyandarua is where Laikipia is.
Laikipia is the capital city of Nyandarua County.
No. Nyandarua County, the capital city for Nyandarua County is Nyahururu.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there are parts of it that are in Laikipia, but most of Laikipia is in Nanyuki.
So you guys are closer to?
To both, we'll call Nakuru the area, but also Nyahururu going all the way to.
So you use A104
while going home.
Okay, yes. All right.
Yeah.
So he moved there to follow his father?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Who had gone ahead to marry another wife, and he had left everyone else back in Nyeri.
Ah.
But my father said, no, I have to take my mother and take him to his husband.
Oh, nice.
Basically. And that's how we ended up saying we go to Nyandarua for shags.
Yeah.
But originally, it was supposed to just be Nyeri.
Nyeri.
Yes, because we are all Nyerians, all aspects.
I think it said that every Kikuyu person is from Muranga. So before you claim Nyeri so much, you're probably more originally from Muranga than you guys
It's just that I don't have the history of Muranga. But I also know that in my lineage, there was a Kimutai at some point who had come in as a farmer and married a Kikuyu girl there. That's where our family basically originated from.
So in that lineage, there is a Kimutai, there is a Ngari.
No, before Ngari, there is a Njiru. There is like...
layers.
There are six other...
Oh, wow.
People I would call great-grandfathers.
Yeah.
And then my grandfather and then...
Your grandfather myself. Is Ngari?
Yes, Ngari.
And then now Ndorere being
my
your
dad,
father.
And then me.
So, is it in Nyandarua that he met Mrs. Ndorere?
My mom?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm.
They actually met where I was born and raised.
Oh, so let's continue with the roots then. So,
yes.
What was your father doing there after he followed your grandfather?
He was actually teaching in Jambine. He was first a teacher because he had really done well in his primary school.
Mm.
He was, I think, number one in his division in Tetu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Nyeri.
And Tetu Constitution. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So he was number one. Mm. So when he came to Nyandarua, he actually went to Jambine as a teacher.
Mm.
He even taught my like their last borns, my uncle and my aunt in the same school. And then he stopped teaching for one or two reasons.
He was just doing
different things. He went to the coast to Voi as a sisal harvester and keeper. And then later on, he moved into construction work. First as a carpenter, and then mason, and then as a foreman.
Still in Mombasa?
No. He came back to Nairobi. Yeah. And that's when he met my mom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, a very illustrious career for him, as to speak. I mean, different things, both as a handyman, but also as a teacher, as a crafter and as a lead. What things about the stories that you've heard about him do you connect with the most right now?
I will say the first story that I connect with the most about him that I see as a parallel also in our own family is that my dad never went to high school, just primary school, and he went straight to teaching.
Yet he was very educated.
Yeah, and he taught like the likes of P.C. Kaguthi. If you remember him, he was his student at some point. So one of the things I relate with the most with him is that he was self-taught, mainly. That's how he went into construction, and he was doing really, really good buildings. Like his buildings, I think, are still the standard in terms of. You remember back then, we didn't have like building engineers and all that. He was the engineer.
Yeah.
He was the architect.
Yeah.
He was the
planner.
The surveyor. He was everything. You can imagine just that kind of trust.
Yeah.
From someone else to give it to him.
Yeah.
I think he was really self-taught, very determined, and I also think he was really a clever man, intelligent in all ways.
Absolutely.
And he basically carried his experiences with him everywhere he went. He wasn't cowed by anything. Yeah.
And so he meets your mom.
Yeah. So they met in Mathare. Because my mom was raised in Mathare. And
so her origins are there? Like
my mom was born in Murang'a, but then he was raised in Mathare.
She was raised in
Because my grandma was working in Marikiti.
Ah.
So she was like an importer of bananas.
Okay.
And distributing it everywhere else. But she was living in Mathare because it was close to Marikiti.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And that's where he was basically taking care of them. My mom is the last born. So the rest had already grown.
Yeah.
And they were raised in Murang'a before they came to Nairobi. And my grandmother was really, really busy trying to amass as much as she could. And my dad was just there hustling in different construction sites. And that's where we met. They met, basically. And that's where we were born and raised.
So when you say we, how many are you?
We are six.
So of the Ndorere kids, you're six?
Yeah, we are six. I'm the fourth born.
Aha.
Yeah.
A family of?
So three boys, three girls.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. And I'm still glad that my dad and mom are still here with us.
That's good.
Yeah.
Long live the Ndoreres.
Yes.
The fourth born is... do you have elder brothers or sisters?
I have two elder sisters. And well, our first born is a... Yeah.
And then behind you?
A girl and a boy.
And... whom you're looking at, who happens to be our very able videographer and editor,
Solo,
whom the credits always roll with his name. So that's really amazing that this story is being told. We're all excited for it. So if they met in Mathare, is that where you're also born, Andre?
Yes. So my mom... is a bit younger than my dad. They have like a 20-year age gap.
Yeah.
And so it has been always interesting to see this old man with this young kids. but that's when they met, and we started getting the children. That's when they started getting their children in a very nice order of two years apart. Yeah, 2 years apart. Which is nice because it means we are all relating and we are all friends to some extent.
Exactly.
And we fight a lot, but we love each other. We eat together.
Yeah.
We used to do all these things together.
What are your most fond memories of your very early childhood?
I would say is just being able to, we used to eat a lot of ugali almost daily. And we learned how to cook ugali quite early. Mm. And so the fondest memory of us is being able to put the whole meal on the table so that we can all eat together.
In one?
Yeah, like in one
senior.
Yeah, in one senior. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that is really something that I sometimes miss.
All six of you children.
All six of us plus the parents. Mm. That's how it used to be when we were growing up. Mm. And we could tell that we are a big family in that way. And they made sure that we had a table in the middle surrounded by chairs so we can...
That's really
able
nice.
To eat well.
Yeah. Were there some of the children who'd be eating more at the expense of the others?
I would say myself.
Yeah.
And my big sister who was playing football.
Oh wow.
She's called Lucy. Mm-hmm. She's among us the first group of girls who left Kenya to go to Norway to play in the Norway Cup and win.
Fantastic.
And then later joined the Harambee Stars.
Fantastic.
Female.
I did not
team.
Know that about Lucy. Really nice.
Yeah. Mm. So she was a pioneer in that in that field. Mm. So together, her and myself used to eat a lot. We all had different reasons why we were eating a lot.
Yours was?
She played football. I was smoking a lot of bang and...
Oh,
so
okay.
I was constantly hungry.
Wait, I think we moved from early childhood. At early childhood, you
at early childhood.
How young?
So my story is a bit interesting. Mm-hmm. Even just sitting here is quite interesting, even for my own family, because like in my own family, I started doing a lot of bad things quite early. Mm. Like I started sniffing glue at the age of 4.
Wow, that's really early childhood.
Yeah, with my cousin, who we are named, it's the same name.
Mm-hmm.
So we started sniffing quite early. Mm. And then later on, at around age 9, 11, 10, we started smoking. He didn't smoke, but I continued with a group of my friends.
And smoking cigarettes?
No, not cigarettes. Mm. I've never smoked cigarettes. I was just smoking, bam. Yeah.
I can imagine... A four-year-old, you're saying you're sniffing glue?
Yes, sniffing glue.
The little experience I have about sniffing glue, I think I would see it from people in a bus, in like those Kenya bus or metro or something, where we are talking about the glue that would be used for...
Repairing shoes.
You sniff that and it gives you a high?
Yeah, it gives you a very good high, actually. You don't feel pain. You can do anything. You can eat anything. You don't care about anything. So you're just having fun.
But at 4, why? How did it get introduced to you at 4?
So me and my cousin used to just spend a lot of time together.
Mm.
And there was, of course, older boys within the same community who were already doing
into
it.
That, yeah.
Yeah, so it was first my cousin who gave it to me while we were swimming in Mathare River.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because we used to go after school. Because where I used to go to school and our home, there was a river in between.
Mm.
So we used to swim after classes in the river.
I'm imagining this is like at pre-primary.
Yes.
So you're going to school, crossing a river, swimming in the river, which is a whole story by itself.
Yeah.
And there's exposure to older people who are... You know, bringing these kinds of is that what you'd ordinarily find in the Mathare community?
That is quite common, where older kids introduce younger kids to different kinds of things, different kinds of experiences, different kinds of, like, they will inspire them in different ways based on what they are doing, and so that was a norm.
Did you take a liking to it?
I wouldn't say a liking per se. I would say it's more of we are doing it as a group.
Mm.
So it's not. It's like this is a social thing that we have to do together. So it wasn't really like I like it.
Mm.
That's why it was easy for me to stop because I never really liked it.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't an issue of likeness, but it was an issue of I want to hang out with these people. This is what they are doing.
Mm.
That's why I used to do it.
Wow, that's an interesting childhood. Already just that part, but I wonder. What else do you remember about, you remember about how you did together, then you through influence you took on to these other things, but what are the other memories that you have of growing up?
So I would say two things.
Mm-hmm.
especially in like primary school mm-hmm. level, I would say my mom left us
mm-hmm.
and went to stay with my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
That was like very bad for me mm-hmm. because I was, when she left, I was in class 4.
Mm-hmm.
I was very young. That's what I was very young.
You are less than 10.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Basically, I was around 10, 9. Mm-hmm. And I had to wash my clothes
mm-hmm.
because my big sisters and mm-hmm. brothers didn't
mm-hmm.
do that
mm-hmm.
for me. So I had to wash my clothes quite early
mm-hmm.
and I felt like this is unfair.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I always felt mm-hmm. because my smaller brother
mm-hmm.
was there.
Mm-hmm.
His clothes were being taken care of. My sister,
yeah.
my smaller sister, her clothes were being taken
care
of.
So you're the one.
So I was, they deemed me a bit older. So you have to take care of yourself.
So yet you're a middle child.
I'm a middle child. So I'm expecting some favors from my older siblings.
But these are, you are in the bottom three. They are not realizing that the top three. So
exactly.
They should do for the bottom three equal things.
Eh? Exactly. So so that was one thing that happened. My mom left.
Mm.
And we used to visit her during the holidays, but she wasn't there when I was doing normal studies and all that.
Mm.
The other memory will be that my dad was really, really present.
Mm.
Even though my mom wasn't there, my dad was really there.
Mm.
And two things he did for us, he made sure that we were well fed.
Mm.
Maybe not clothed, but we were really, like we ate very, very well.
Mm.
And we were even extremely generous to our neighbors and friends of mine who didn't have... who couldn't get lunch or who couldn't get dinner, so they could come and join us for these meals. So we always felt loved in that way.
Mm.
But also, my dad forced us to go to church quite early on.
Mm.
So in as much as I was doing these other things, there was always a balance.
Mm.
Yeah, that I know. I know about God.
Mm.
I know about what God can do for me.
Mm.
I know about what God wants for me.
Mm.
But I am still doing these things because I still basically live in this environment where these things are the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a really good balance.
Mm.
When I look back, I always think that was really pivotal for me in primary school because I already started thinking about my future quite early on.
Mm. And speaking of primary school,
yeah.
What are your schools from pre-primary to primary?
So I went to Redeemed Gospel Church. Mm-hmm. They used to have, initially I went to Good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a children's home, but they used to have a really nice school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you're not paying anything to go there.
Ah,
so that's where I went first. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Redeemed Gospel Church, Mathare.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have basically a preschool, kindergarten mm-hmm. kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I finished studying there, I went to Mathare, Mathare Old Primary School, where I did all the 8 years
of primary. From class 1 through to class 8.
Through to class 8. And I was always like number 1, 2, or 3, mainly number 1. Yeah, so I was always, I knew I'm a brilliant kid.
How was your time in school, other than books and...
So I would say I enjoyed being in school for many reasons.
That's good.
I enjoyed being in school for many reasons, especially just... the fact that I was in school with my friends from the same community, that was really nice because we had stories that could extend between Monday to Sunday. And because we are spending time with the same people all the time. And it helped me basically have friends from the whole Mathare region.
Yeah.
So not just one
which
area.
Which is large.
Yeah, it's very big because you're talking about several villages. And I had friends in all these villages. So I could go into all these villages and
feel at home.
Yeah, and feel at home and know that people know me. Yeah, like friends of my sisters, friends of my brothers. So I always felt safe in Mathare regardless of where I was at whatever time.
There was a socializing... What were you very good at in school?
In school, I would say English, the written, spoken, mainly because I wasn't really, we weren't really talking a lot of
speaking
English.
Speaking it most,
But I was really good at compositions and just comprehension and grammar, all those things. I loved, we did art during
did
my
art
time.
In school? Okay.
And home science.
Mm.
And I loved art.
Mm.
And I got an interest in art.
We're talking fine art or?
No, just the basic art and craft
okay.
in primary school. So I did that and I enjoyed that before it was removed, just before we did our exams. So, but I had already gotten an interest in it.
And home science as well.
And home science as well.
Knitting.
Knitting, yeah. Cooking, baking, those kinds of
those
things.
Those are good things, yeah.
And some agriculture here and there.
They have reintroduced it to
the CBC.
The current CBC, but has very different things.
Yeah, but I still think they're important in terms of how a child needs to grow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. From what you're saying so far, what I've gathered is, you are in your home. So you're first of all, you know, in a loved home.
Like
you're feeling loved.
Yeah.
Mama's probably left to back to her mother, and then your dad, you know, is ensuring you and your siblings are finding your way.
Yeah.
You have this other cousin that you're working with to do the naughty and notorious.
Yeah.
You also have things that are happening in school and in the whole community. You're sort of finding your way as you break into adolescence and with the kind of experience you've already had as a child.
Yeah.
What are your reflections, especially of your early adolescence?
So I remember making a lot of decisions when I was going to class 8.
Okay. You are around 13, 14 then?
Yeah, around 12. Mm. I decided not to continue smoking or doing any other drug.
Mm.
I just decided.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt... I don't think I got addicted at any given point. Mm. I just used to do it because everyone else is doing it.
Mm.
Not because I like it and I want to continue showing that I'm showing up for them
and
I'm leading them even at that particular time. So I can't not do the things that they are doing.
Mm.
So I remember making that decision quite early on when I decided, no, I would like to have a different kind of life. I don't know what that looks like.
Mm.
What I know is I would want to follow the footsteps of my father.
Mm.
And so what I did initially was to start just drawing houses.
Mm-hmm.
I used to draw a lot of like nice houses.
Mm.
And then one of my class teachers, called Mr. Minor, was teaching us GXC.
Mm-hmm. That geography.
Geography.
History and civics.
Mm. Yes.
Mm.
He actually bought my book.
Mm.
Said, no, I like this book. Let me take this money.
Mm.
It was like 50 shillings. But it was a really big confidence booster for me in terms of my abilities and what I can do at that particular time. And the other thing I remember saying is that I still want to continue doing church as much as possible.
Mm.
If I have a chance, I'll still go to church on Sunday. Now I'm not forced by anyone. I just want to go.
Were there circumstances that were leading you to make those choices, or was it just...
So at that time, there weren't any circumstances. It was just like an awareness in my head that I want something different from everything else that I'm seeing and from everyone else who's doing whatever it is that they are doing. But just before that, my age 12, around age 11, something happened where I mixed drugs and I remember I removed all my clothes because I was so high and I was running in the field while my sister was practicing with her friends and her teammates and just shouting different things.
What concoction was that?
No, just the combination of glue. Basically glue and bang and weed, basically that was something else.
Mm.
Yeah. So I was extremely, extremely high and they had to like buy milk for me so I can cool down, and I slept under a tree.
Mm.
We used to have a lot of trees in Madare back then.
Mm.
Not anymore.
Mm.
But I slept under a tree until they finished, and then we went home. And I remember when I was a bit sober, I asked my sister not to share this information with my parents.
Mm.
And she didn't share this information with my dad, but she told my mom, and she was expecting that my mom will not tell my, but my mom immediately told my dad about it.
Mm. Now, you, as a parent, now you understand.
Now I understand.
It is what is
important.
Expected.
It's important that husbands and their wives share information as much as possible
of their children, especially.
Exactly, about what is going on with their children, so that they can better take care of them.
Yeah.
And I remember I was locked in. We used to have like broiler chickens that we were keeping for.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, and I remember being locked inside for a whole night, and in the morning.
As punishment.
It's punishment, and it's punishment because it has happened. It had happened already many times. Mm. And my dad used to beat us like with like a strong whip. I had mine. It had my own name. Everyone had their own.
Mm.
My mistakes were very big, and so I had like a very strong whip. that he used to beat me with. So I was already used to being whipped because of these other things. But that night I had to rethink because I slept with a chicken. And they had, there was like these things, we used to call them guya or something.
I forget the name.
So they ate me the whole night. Oh, and then in the morning when I woke up, my dad asked me to remove my clothes, only my, and remain with my underpants. Gave me 2 jugs of water to drink. You know, he was still thinking I'm not sober. So he wants to sober me up so that he can beat me now. So 2 jugs of water and then being whipped outside where everyone else is seeing what is going on.
Wow.
In the morning. So I always just, I was basically piggy banking on that experience. Also when I was thinking about what kind of future I want to have.
Your life's decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Though I had kind of just stopped doing it as much as, I lost so many school pants because of being high. I used to walk naked a lot in my life.
Oh my goodness. You're that guy.
Yeah. Like I kept on losing my clothes.
Yeah,
when I was high.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Was it unique to you or like in your family? Like, was that unique to you?
Yes, everyone else in my home was really good.
Other than
other than my older brother who had some issues with drugs, but
you like,
and he started very old doing those things. Yeah, but I started very young, which is quite interesting. Nice. Everyone else thought I was like a gone case. They weren't expecting a lot from me.
Yeah.
In terms
but nonetheless, in school, you're still performing well.
Which is also interesting for everyone, because they're wondering, how comes this guy who's always in these problems, and these troubles, and all these things, why is he still getting all this? It's not a lot of, when you talk about the results themselves, it's not a lot. So I'm a first amongst failures, but I'm still a first.
The equals are all, okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So how do you perform for your grade, class 8?
So after I've changed my mind and started behaving a little bit
better,
I didn't get a lot of, like I was above average in terms of what I got at KCMP. So I didn't have many options for high school, but also I still was determined. So something to note, I'm the fourth born, but I'm the first person to go to high school in my family and finish. Because my big sister tried and she came back after the first school term. but I'm the only person who
continued
and finished high school.
How was your high school?
My high school was...
And which one was it?
I went to St. Teresa's Boys, just across the road from Mathare. And the reason why I went to St. Teresa's Boys is because my dad wanted me to go to a very, like a close, a school that is nearby, where he can easily come in case of anything. He wants to show up and discipline me in front of people. He's used to doing that at this particular time.
For you especially.
Yeah. But one of the reasons why I made that particular choice is also because most of the people in my community weren't really going to high school. So I'm not sure if it was a choice for them or it was just the circumstances. People didn't have enough to take their kids to high school. But I made that decision. I didn't know what I was going to get in high school, but I knew I wanted to go to high school.
To still have the education.
So when I told my parents this news, they weren't really expecting it. It wasn't coming from them that I should go to high school. That's also one of the... I will call it an interesting thing for me because, you know, I made that choice and I told them I have to go. And then they started making the plans for me to actually go.
You placed a demand on something that was not ordinary.
Exactly.
You know, in your family context.
Yeah. And then the other unfortunate thing is when I made that particular demand, it was during close to the transition where we are moving from Moi to Kibaki.
Right.
And when Kibaki came in, there was a lot of regulations around the building industry. So my dad couldn't really continue to be becoming a foreman without the necessary documents and licenses. So he had to kind of just retire at that particular time. But then he was also diagnosed with a lot of body issues, like blood sugar was high. he had blood pressure, he had diabetes, he had all this, like a concoction of different diseases that showed up at the same time. And so he had to leave Nairobi. Yeah. Not immediately, because now they had to do an exchange with my mom. My mom has to come back to take care of us. My dad has to go back, to go to Shags, basically, so that he can take care of himself. And so he gave me 9,000 shillings that he had saved up until that particular point. Told me, this is your money for school fees. But I don't have anything else. I was also supposed to traditionally get circumcised because I had finished class 8 and didn't have money for that plus my school fees. So there was also a delay in that. So I went to high school without getting circumcised until April. After I had joined, then they had to look for money so that I can continue.
You need to prioritize with what was there.
Exactly. So I went to high school, in March. In March instead of end of January, like everyone else. Because I had to look for like shoes, like uniform.
Bags. Books, yeah.
All these things that they needed from me. Which was like a tall order because I had to like really do a lot. I had to visit my cousins, look for different shirts. If it's the blue shirts, I had to look for a cousin who had a blue shirt so they can give it to me. Because the sweater I had to buy in school because it had the school logo. Yeah, so it wasn't an easy process just going to high school. But even then, when I joined high school in that particular first school term, I was still number 3. My class. So I was excited. And I said, regardless of what is going on, I have to persist. And I did. And my mom came and she started doing different things. So she used to like peel potatoes so that she can have extra income. So she can pay for my school fees. And she did that almost the entire time I was in school. But it was never enough. So I used to spend more time at home than
in school.
So I don't really look at high school as an experience because I wasn't really there a lot. When people are going for trips, I wasn't there. I couldn't afford to go for any trip. I never attended any set book in school. I never attended any activity in school because I couldn't afford to go at that particular time. So my high school was, and I was still above average in terms of the grades I was still getting. Because I will say being in class for let's say 5 days out of 10, I still understood everything in the 5 days I was in school. Though I couldn't do anything about the extra 5 days I wasn't in school. Yeah, so that was my high school experience mainly.
Not a very memorable one, should you speak. But do you have any, is there any incident? Or not incident negatively, just is there any particular memory of the 4 years in school?
It isn't a really good one, but it's one of those that also was very instrumental in who I ended up becoming. Because remember when I was in Form 1 that whole year, a lot of my friends had joined gangs, the friends gangs. That we cleared primary school together with. And so I remember very clearly that almost every Friday afternoon or Saturday we were burying someone for almost an entire year. So I lost 90% of the people I went to primary school with during that particular one year.
You're seeing them, they're
being killed.
They have passed on because they have been shot.
Yes, because they started basically that life of crime. And they are just 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds, not even 18 or 19 or what we are used to.
What did that do to you? Did it?
So what happened is that was quite common for me. So it wasn't traumatic in a way, but I started thinking about my small bro and his friends. He used to hang out with like 6 or 7 boys his age all the time. So while I was in high school, I started thinking about him a lot. He's talented, he's already dancing in church, he's doing different things. And I was thinking, no, how can I make sure that my bro who's growing in this community doesn't join
the same
criminal gangs and all that. I remember I didn't do anything specifically at that time because he was still very young. But I thought, no, when I clear high school, that's the first thing I want to I like to look for a solution for that. However it should come, however it will be.
Yeah.
And the other thing that happened during that time is the same year, a friend of mine called Steve Karethi, we used to go to the same church. He did a sermon in our Steve's church, and he was talking about the fact that God has called us as kings and priests. And I thought, okay, this makes sense. This looks nice. It looks like something I can apply in the Bible. So I've been called as a king. I don't like preaching. I don't like being in church. So king looks nicer, looks better. So I thought, no, I want us to do something about it. I was hanging out with some people in church also at that particular time. So what we did was we formed a group. We used to call ourselves Wafalme.
Wafalme.
Wafalme, and we used to basically rap and do reggae, raga basically. So we started, and then my name was Johnny King, which was really...
That's where J King comes from.
That's where J King basically comes from, which is what I call myself and Patil today. Because I was able to get, like... I was able to understand that God had a specific reason and purpose for making me. And that was quite like an
eye-opening
in terms of... So this, what I'm used to seeing as inspiration in the slum is these are older kids who are criminals, who are dressing very well, who are dating every woman that you would want to date, who are living in these nice houses. They have nice things, basically. And that's what inspired us, or Matatu drive us from the same slum.
Wow.
That was our inspiration. But now I get to see, oh, okay, there's something special. Like,
yeah.
I don't have to live that life. I don't have to do that. But I didn't know what I wanted to do at that particular time.
Through just one teaching.
One teaching. Quite eye-opening. Yeah.
Okay. Based on, you know, what your father, the discipline that your father did, but also based on your own life, what happened to some of the people that, you know, to your cousin and the people in school who this was their life?
So, this is something I wanted to mention also, is that we can never, never underestimate the value of having like a male figure in your life. Because very specifically, I would say, the difference between me and most of my friends was that at 7 p.m., I had to be in my house. They didn't have to. Because no one was coming to ask them to go into their homes. But they didn't have dads present. But my dad was present. So whatever it is they started learning in the dark with no guidance is what caused most of them to actually perish. While I was in the house with my dad and my siblings. Yes, being beaten for something that he had done during the day, but he's still there. And he was very strict. But he was very loving. And he tried a lot in terms of, like, when I started, like, sniffing glue with my cousin never stopped. Because it was just my cousin and my aunt. And my aunt wasn't really that strong disciplinarian. And then where she was living, everyone else was just sniffing glue in the same community. They kind of just, they hadn't really given up, but they didn't know what to do. About it. And my cousin ended up, he went to approved school, he left approved school, he continued sniffing glue. We used to go to Isili together to collect garbage and throw it so that we can get the 5 shillings so that we can go and buy glue together. And I used to just do it so that I can get money. He had to do it because he wanted to stay in the streets. Didn't want to go back to school. He didn't want to do anything basically in his life. Right now my cousin can't even walk. Because he has been, like, vehicles has...
Amputated.
Many times. Both his legs kind of are just boneless, like Ivar the Boneless Vikings. He can't walk, basically. Wow. And he can't even talk well. So he has lost a lot of memory. And that's what basically has happened in the community for a lot of young people who didn't end up growing up and becoming criminals. Still ended up becoming... dying basically. And I escaped that life just because there was a presence in my life, a presence that was really pulling me and showing me love and showing and still disciplining
tough
me.
Love
it was really tough love. And I loved my dad for it, and I still hated him because it was at those moments where I hated him, but I also could tell he loved me, because I remember him beating me and then him picking me, taking me, he knew I loved eating. So him going with me and buying sweet things for me. And then we come back home and then he starts massaging my back, which has, of course, a lot of lines because of the whipping.
The strips, yeah.
Exactly. But at least I could tell that he was doing it out of love, not out of hate. That's the only reason why I will never discount his influence in terms of me being able to have like an anchor constantly, regardless of what I end up doing.
It literally means life or death.
Exactly.
In that situation, you know, as you're explaining, if most of the other people who lacked a male figure and the mother that they had was probably... There's only so much you can do as a mom, you know. For boys, it's different to raise boys if you're a lady. You need that constant male figure. For you, the male figure wasn't just a male figure. It was a loving father.
It was a loving father.
And a disciplinarian.
A disciplinarian. Yeah. And a person who basically used what he had, which is church, the whip, the food.
And yet...
all these things.
And yet, that time your mom is in... Nyandarua.
Yes.
So this is the one, this is the single parent at home.
Yes.
Who is, you know, chief parent in situations.
And it's interesting when you say that, because during the day he's at work. So what he did, which was quite annoying, is that he had spoken to everyone in the community.
He had planted spice.
The caretaker there. The people who are selling water, he told them, whenever you see this boy doing whatever, let me know. So he'll, in the evening, he'll just pass by asking questions to find out what he's going to beat me for doing during the day. And I remember instances where every time he went to visit my mom, or his mom, who was very sick, it was at those times where I started basically hanging out with, and I noticed that people had actually become criminals in real life. And I remember stealing a radio for one person who later became my brother-in-law.
he used to have
a shop, and we used to steal bread every day. And we started progressing and stealing other things until we stole the radio. And my guilt consciousness couldn't allow me to remain with that radio. I had to return it. And one time we went with my cousins and some few friends to Huruma to steal at a grocery shop. And I remember I was still a very big boy, so I couldn't run as fast as the rest. And I was caught and I was beaten, but they said I was too young, so they couldn't, so they released me.
Mob justice or?
Yes, at that particular shop. So I still have some marks in my body from that particular thing that happened that particular time.
Such a bug. I mean, you know, when people talk about stories and where people have come from, where you have come from and the kind of experience you have is genuinely like no other that I've had on this platform or or so many other people I know. But somehow you came to change and your life is very different, and what you see and what you get is very different. And I'm even now more eager to hear the connecting pieces to what your whole story would be. So we'd gotten to the point where you have you have completed high school, and how is that period for you?
So miraculously, I was able to clear high school. I say miraculously because when I was going to clear, my final exam, we already cleared all the school fees.
Oh, that's good.
So miraculously, I still say miraculously because I never remember where the money came from to clear for that particular school fees. But I cleared high school. And immediately when I cleared high school, there was a program that started in Mathare. So we were like around 12 people who had cleared high school at that particular time, around 5 males and 3 females. And so we were invited to that particular program. It was called TROP. So we did a rite of passage basically under TROP, and we were taught different things. I wasn't interested. I went there because I'm very consistent in following up and being present and being there. But I never really was interested. But the thing about me is I always listen. Regardless of how interested I am or not, I always listen. And I get what I need to get. And what I got from that particular experience, I got a certificate at the end. And I loved it. And I still I still look at it and say, this was one of my defining moments where I got to understand and connect to my purpose. And my purpose was quite clear at that particular time that I wanted to do something in my community.
Mm.
Because I felt like if I don't do something, then no one else will do.
Mm.
Meaning that we'll still have young people dying, still have girls becoming prostitutes or getting married quite young and then losing their husbands to crime, meaning they have to take care of their young children the alone.
Continues.
So the cycle will basically continue.
Mm.
So I thought, no, I want to do something.
Mm.
At that particular time, I don't know what because I have no experience. Mm. I'm not exposed to anything.
Mm.
But as a result of being able to go through TROP, I was invited to be amongst the people who would help implement a program called Talents Alive.
Mm.
And from Talents Alive, I was able to learn a few things about administration, about operations.
Mm.
I was quite young. And I was starting to do like PowerPoint presentations, which was an eye-opener again for me. Like, I have never touched a computer in my life, but I'm touching computers now.
Mm.
And as a result, my confidence started growing.
Mm.
I still didn't know what I was supposed to do.
Mm.
But I was doing it, whatever it is I was
showing
my hands. I was showing up, I was engaging, I was learning, I was getting as much information as possible.
Mm.
And then when Talents Alive basically ended for me that particular time, it was really heartbreaking because I didn't know what to do. Fortunately, a friend of mine called Steve, who had met 5 years
before
earlier,
then.
Started something called Lepta,
and
he invited us basically to co-found it and to register it together and to start doing activities together.
Mm.
And I was given like a very senior title, operations manager.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. I don't know how to do operations.
You have to learn on the job.
So I had to learn on the job. So I embarked on a lot of self-learning.
Mm.
When I was 19 and 20, I think I read over 50 books.
Mm.
And not just reading. I used to read and implement.
Mm.
That's the thing.
Mm.
I read about everything. Nursing, engineering. Mm. Any book I could get, I could read.
Mm.
And I was like trying to clear books within 2 weeks and trying to write down what I need to implement from what I have just read. So I read about management, about leadership, about spirituality. I read about different kinds of things. Mm. So I really did a lot of reading those 2 years because I was idle in the office. Mm. I don't know what to do with my time.
And I'm spending manager.
The whole day in the office. Mm. I used to leave home at around 7 a.m. without breakfast.
Mm.
I didn't like being at home because I didn't like my mom.
Because
my mom had abandoned us. Mm. That's what I always felt.
Yeah.
And while I was in high school, she always blamed me.
Mm.
That we don't have enough because I'm paying school fees for you.
Mm.
I understand what the frustration that he had, but I always felt at that time that she never loved me. Because even just going back home was chaotic for me. So I never wanted to spend time in my house, basically. So I used to leave at 7 a.m. And come back home at 12 p.m. Actually, 12 a.m.
12 midnight?
Yeah, 12 midnight.
Oh, my goodness.
Basically. So I spent the whole day in the office reading. Mm. Then in the evening, I hung out with my best friends at that time.
Mm.
And sometimes eat at their home. Because I'd never liked going to my home. I wanted to go to my home in Mathare to just sleep.
Mm.
I never wanted to see my mom
and
all that. But now we are good friends and we patched things a bit later. I became a bit more mature.
Mm.
And I understood where she was coming from. But that was so Lepta, the rite of passage, really grounded me. I started learning, I started becoming a bit more exposed to what I need to do and what I need to become.
So having been from, I'm trying to imagine you at that time, having been from this the kind of background, the most you've done is, you know, a lot of you've been doing church because, you know, dad insisted that you have to be in church. But you've tried out, and you know, you've tried out as many things as can possibly be tried out by a teenager at that time, and somehow miraculously you finished school without debt.
Yes.
And then now this period that you're coming now into beginning to get to your own, where you have the choice of beginning to determine and to think about where you're going in life.
Yeah.
how is it phrasing you as an individual? What are you feeling like you've been called up to the next level? Like, understand what you're talking about, the programs, the post high school kind of programs that you involved yourself in, and also what you're saying about not wanting to go back to the house. But as an individual, what are you beginning to think about yourself and about life and about career and about purpose and about giving back? What's happening? What's bubbling under for you?
So out of some experiences, so I remember telling you that I used to rap. And I did that for 4 years.
Yeah, Wafalme.
Wafalme. Which during my high school years.
Yeah.
Outside school, so I used to rap and I used to travel different places, go to different churches and do the music. That was quite exciting.
That was exciting, yeah?
It was really exciting. Mm. And it basically caused me not to be in Mathare most of the time, which was really, really nice for me at that particular time. Because again, just knowing Mathare wasn't doing it for me, I wanted to see more. But the other thing that also happened is, I remember I asked my friend to take me to a studio because I wanted now to professionally record the songs. So we went with my friend. I used to sing with someone called Kennedy. So we went to a studio, and I remember this was, we went to see Gideon Kimanzi. He was a producer at that particular time. He was doing production for Maxima Melodies. So he was really good in terms of, like, if you think about Maxima Melodies at that time, then you think you want to work with their producer.
Yeah,
because the other producer was RK.
Actually, it was
just two of them in the gospel industry.
Oh, yeah, the rest were not.
Because I was doing gospel, so we went to the studio, and so Gideon told us, you guys, can you do a few songs? I want to just have a feel of what you do. So we did 3 songs. Atupenda, Tutashinda. We had very, very nice gospel songs according to...
you guys.
Exactly. According to how we felt about those songs. And we had performed them for 4 years. And people shouted that they were really happy about the songs. And then when we finished, I remember vividly, I have never forgotten these words, but the producer told us, you guys, I want you to go back and I want you to think about if this is what you're supposed to be doing. And you remember that particular time I had already been exposed to purpose and to these other things. So that also started helping me in terms of... So that was... It was heartbreaking, but also very insightful in terms of what does he mean? Does he think I shouldn't be singing? And I already made a list about the things I want to do, how big I want to become as an artist, where I want to travel, how I want to dress. I had already made all this plan, and it's telling me, you have to think about if this is what you're supposed to be doing. So that was quite pivotal in terms of... I left that particular room. We broke up in terms of the group because I felt like I can't do this.
From that conversation?
From that conversation, we didn't even spend 2 days. I just stopped. He continued for a while, and then he went into worship to become worship leader. But I stopped. And I started thinking, so I've been singing, I've had a following, I have dancers, my small bro and many others are dancing for us. But then I'm told, maybe I'm, and I know I'm gifted. I love singing, I love rap, I love music, I know.
You play some instruments?
I play the guitar, I play the keyboard at that particular time. So I knew I was gifted, but now if I can't sing, what can I do? And so when I joined Lepta, we were doing a program called the Esters program. And this was primarily for girls, take them back to school, or basically to help them continue with their education. And at that particular time, we used to have Mungiki in Mathare. So they were the government, they were the order of the day. And so some of them wanted to make these girls their wives by force. And so what we were doing at Lepta is trying to create an escape plan for this girl. So we took them to a boarding school in Sagana called All Saints as a way of basically just hiding them from whatever it is that is happening in this community. But this conversation with Gidi happened almost at the same time. I thought, okay, so I'm gifted, I love music, I have a passion for music. What can I do with this gift? Otherwise, it will just go to waste. And I discovered that I had a gift. That's why I was pursuing it. So I went back and started thinking, so what can I do? What can I do? And then I ended up starting an arts program. Because of course, later that particular time, you're just focusing on girls. And my interest has always been to create
spaces for arts.
Spaces for arts, but also for boys that will allow them not to go back to crime or to drugs and all those things. So we started an art program called Education Factory School of Arts. And initially, we didn't even know how we were going to do it. So we just thought we were going to do a concert and that's it. But then before we did the concert, I thought, no, they need to learn something. So from the books, from the very many books I was reading, I already had notes about things I wanted to teach them. And these are kids who are in primary school, I think class 4, 5, 6. They're very young, basically. I still call them and ask them, sit down, I want to teach you. I want to teach you about management. I want to teach you about... And I started teaching them, basically. And it was from the teaching, I started bonding with, like, being a teacher and being a trainer and facilitating things like management and leadership and just how to personal develop yourself from whatever you have around yourself and how to have, like, bigger vision for your life and ambitions that were not common in Mathare. So these kids were really excited to be there. And I remember I used to ask my friend who currently lives in Japan called Laban. I used to ask him, I need some bananas and some biscuits or something. I should give these kids something so they can stay with me the whole day. I don't want them to go anywhere. That's when schools are closed or like on Saturdays. So we used to buy bananas and biscuits and something. So they were spending time with me. Sometimes I used to do keshas, the whole nighters. Yeah. So at this particular time, I'm doing these things experimentally. Because I no one is telling me what to do. No one is even guiding me on what to teach or what not to teach. So I'm learning on the job. So I'm training them what I'm learning every single day. So when I read a book and I learn this, immediately I think about how can I make it a bit more practical and come teach it. And from RF, I was also able to have a program for other kids also who are not basically just artists and musicians. And I used to do that quite a lot at that particular time.
Did you call it anything different?
So it was the Get to Know It program, basically. And we used to do camps, used to do different kinds of things. And I want to also mention something before we moved on, because it's happening almost at the same time. This is in 2006. I started dating the woman that I'm married to, the mother of my kids and the love of my life.
And the wife of your youth.
And the wife of my youth, because I was really young when I got married. Yeah, but so that's when we met. She's from Mathare also. She's called Hilda. It was interesting how I decided that I wanted to date her. It wasn't, I hadn't planned. It was not by design. It kind of just happened. That's one of my friends whispered to me that he thinks that Hila likes me. I don't think she did like me at that time. So I went to see her and we had a good conversation. And I liked the fact that she was also thinking like outside the box, outside Mathare.
Progressive.
Yeah, progressively, basically, about her future, about her life. And I thought, this is really interesting. And I like to attach to people like that. And so we started dating in 2006. And she was part of the people I was also training. She used to come for training programs.
Cradle snatcher. You are dating your teachers, dating their students.
Yeah, but I dated her before she joined the training. She wanted to go through the training and to learn from me. And she felt like I was really inspirational in terms of what I was talking about at my young age. And I wouldn't lie, I had very good good support system. Because like Laban, Steve, you are there. And many other people who are a bit older than me, who are always ready to give a helping hand and some guidance. Yeah, and so over the next 4 years, I was just doing a lot of trial and error in terms of teaching and training. And,
okay.
Yeah. Music, whether it's music, whether it's dance. I was like a manager for a dance group.
Mm.
I was doing, I was dabbling many different things at that particular time. Mm. But I was also learning graphic design almost at the same time.
Mm.
So I was still teaching myself many different things.
Mm.
So I had like 4 years of what I'll consider university because I didn't have prospects to go to school after high school.
Mm. So these are
the 4 years after high school.
And I don't want us to rush them because they are super important.
Okay.
So let's go bit by bit. So so you start dating, you see Hilda, artist formerly known as Miss Kerebi, now known as Mrs. Ngari.
Yes.
You identify, I mean, you both identify each other, that, you know, something gravitates to you,
to each other,
to her, and from her to you. And how was dating a girl from the same community? What was she doing at the time? What are the things that comprised your dating period?
So when I started dating Hila, she was in Form 3.
Cradle snatcher, bro.
And I had just cleared.
Oh, my God.
I was like 6 months after high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was early.
It was quite early.
When
I think about it, I'm still amazed that it happened at that particular time.
You wouldn't recommend your child to do the same?
I'm not sure. But but I still think it was too early in a way.
Yeah.
But I feel like if it hadn't happened at that particular time,
yeah,
we wouldn't have.
Mm.
I don't think we would have ended up in the same.
Time and chance.
Yeah, but time and chance was for us to meet there and then for us. Because she had really strong ambitions about her future. I think she was just planning to leave Mathare altogether.
So, but she's so how are you dating when she's in school?
So we were both in, we were in sister schools, like
St. Joseph's
Boys, St. Joseph's
Boys, St. Joseph's Girls.
St. Joseph's Girls. But you had cleared. We live in Mathare.
Okay.
We're all day scholars, and we meet on Saturdays and Sundays sometimes. Yeah, mostly on Sundays, because she used to go to school on Saturdays. She was determined and ambitious more than I was. Yeah,
for her future, academic,
and her career.
So
that's how we met, and I remember I didn't have anything, so dating meant just walking together, visiting,
spending
her
time together,
her home, walking together from church to school to different places. Yeah, that was what dating was.
Spending quality time.
Yeah, more quality time than anything else. So it wasn't really just about going somewhere or doing things. It was about spending hours together, literally. And her mom started noticing that this was different. They're just having conversations in the house, nothing else. It's just to talk and talk and talk and talk for hours. We became very, very good friends. That allowed us to, because we became friends for 7 years before we got married.
Wow.
So we were together for seven straight years. Yeah.
At what point, especially within those first 4 years after high school, do you feel like it got serious with her? Or was it always serious from the get-go?
So 2 years after we started dating, when she joined the program and she went, after she had cleared high school, she joined our program for that first year.
For Get to Know It or recreation?
The Get to Know It program. Okay. So we had a leadership program specifically in the Get to Know It. We used to train people who are even way older than I was at that particular time. But they still came and gathered with us. So we had like 22 people who came every single Sunday afternoon for over a year just to learn leadership from someone who didn't even have a clear plan about what they're going to teach in the next session. And she was amongst those. And every time she used to come to the session, she wanted to do something extra, like to make sure that it was the office was clean. We had something to bite. She was really like supporting and helping
practically.
She felt like she wants to learn, but she also wants to support me in what I'm doing. And I thought, no, I want to marry her. I don't want to waste this this friendship and this love that she's showing me. And I fell in love with her completely. And I thought, no, I'll do everything possible to make her happy, but also to make her content with who I am and the future that I'm trying to build towards. And then we started like really planning the wedding quite early. So like we had like a very clear wedding planned.
Mm. Years before.
Way, many years. Mm. So it was interesting that even when we started like the planning of the wedding itself, we only had two meetings. Because we had already figured out everything. So we never had like a committee.
Right.
Because it was just two meetings too. This is the money we need. Where are we going to get it? And the second one was, this is the roles during the wedding. You're going to do this, you're going to do this, and that's it. Yeah, we never had meetings to plan. We already planned it out. Yeah. Because we were really close. We had the same things in common. We knew exactly what we wanted.
So you get to introduce each other to each other's homes.
Yeah. So of course, coming from other end, just living near each other, our parents knew each other. Like my last born and her last born were best friends since they were very young. My sisters were friends, so we were friends. So we didn't really need to introduce until we got to a point where we said, no, actually want to marry your daughter. That was 2 years later. So 4 years dating. So immediately I mentioned to her mom that I would like to marry her daughter. And so we had a conversation. She told me I didn't want her to finish university first. When I'm telling her this, I'm like 23 or 24. I'm very young.
Very young.
I'm very young.
Yeah.
I told her, it's okay, but give us a date so that we can start coming official. As we wait for the graduation. And so she gave us some dates. I went with a few friends to officially inform her that we want to get married. And then later on, we had another date for dowry negotiations. I was like 24 when I started the dowry negotiation process. And then we progressed until we got to the actual wedding, which was when I was 26 and she was 24 when she cleared university.
So you're almost 23. So you're almost 10 years. You're almost getting to 10 years of marriage, but many more years of knowing her. Around 15 years or more of knowing her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Basically, we've been together. So 7 years of dating and 8 years of marriage.
Wow. 15. Yeah. That's amazing. And at the same time, and that's a lovely story. Thank you for sharing it. And kudos to you, Hilda, for putting up with. Anyway.
And for seeing
the potential.
Yes, because there wasn't. It was just raw.
The reef in the rough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
Yeah.
You are at the time, you mentioned also, Recreation Factory, you've talked about it a bit, get to know it, you've talked about it. You mentioned you were also sort of manager to a dance group.
Yes. So the dance group was called XTs. When I was in Mathare, when I was in high school, they were still dancing. And I had like my own room in Mathare. And they used to use my room to dance, like a room without
practice,
like with earth floor, basically to dance when they couldn't find space in the in a local church where we used to go.
Wow.
So and my brother was there and many other people from the same community that I really wanted to help and nurture and work with. And so it just happened naturally that when the time came, I started managing them and working with them.
And what did managing them, especially given that you're also now exposed to a lot of leadership, you're also exposed to, you know, other things, industry things. You yourself have been to a studio with, you know, senior producers. You've done Talents Alive. You've like the kind of exposure you have around all of these things, management, leadership, artistry, is quite a bit. So is that what you're offering to them?
So my management is a bit different because it's really about just teaching them. I was just training them every single day. Not how to dance. I wasn't a dancer. I couldn't dance. So it was really about helping them navigate through life, learn the right skills, about self-management, about taking care of themselves, about having like what we call righteous ambitions, not just living for yourself, but for your community. And we had a very clear idea about what we will do together. So we thought we will, one day in the future, we'll have like a building that will act as a school that will have different rooms and everyone will do different things in that particular building. So we'll have a person who's teaching guitar, keyboard, dance, all these things. And that. So I thought I'm going to grow old with them at that particular time. So I was building them so we can go together into this future of management. So I'm actually basically just teaching them management skills. And so when we used to have concerts, they will be the people who are also organizing these concerts with RF, the Recreation Factory School of Art. Yeah. So we used to do concerts called Reason to Live concerts. And they were big concerts in Mathare, but my goal wasn't not to basically just do big concerts. My goal was to give these people that I'm teaching a platform where they can actually utilize the knowledge and the skills that they were getting in class. And so, and the teaching used to happen at night because they were like, so we used to meet on Fridays, the whole night.
Oh yeah, because they were students.
Because they were still students, some in primary, some in high school. So we used to just spend that night together, and learning different things, constantly praying, doing, then leaving them to actually practice the dance moves,
And then they would go back to school on Saturday.
Go back to school on Saturday, or go to a concert on Saturday afternoon.
Wow.
Yeah. So my work was to just ferry them, make sure that they were professional by coming on time. Dressing well in uniform and also just getting what they need to get.
So they show up and how they show up.
And how they show up and doing a good job at it. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And so what became of Ecstasy?
So Ecstasy morphed into many things. So some members who were going to Jamhuri, they joined a different, they together with some close friends in school formed something we call the Black Blingers. We ended up doing a lot of things, amazing things. They won so many awards, big awards. They became millionaires quite young. They won 1 million shillings while they were still babies, I would say. And they had to think about how to take care of many different things. Some of them went to film. So they ended up doing different things. Yeah.
And somehow...
As they continued growing.
Yeah. As they continue, I mean, that's amazing. Yeah. I think a lot of our audience has also probably heard about Black Blingers. Just the fact that there were what, many two-time award winners of Sakata and many, I think, Katika and others. But what you're saying is very significant, that... the kind of time that you spent with them and also with the other 22 leaders in 22 young people in the leadership program, get to know it.
Yeah.
You are not only exercising your own teaching, facilitation, training gift, you're also raising people very deliberately.
Yes.
And not over a short period of time.
It's what initially I thought I would basically train them for like 3-year periods.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah, 3-year period.
That was what was in my head.
No, that, like but that's,
I trained them for 3 years.
That's also really nice just by itself, because that's a long-term commitment you're making to someone. It's like a school period. You may, I mean, campus life is, especially if it's accelerated with the blocks, it's 3 years.
Exactly.
So that's a commitment you're making to people for 3 years. I thought you said 3-week program.
No, I've never done a short-term program. And my every time I did short-term programs like camps and all that, I wasn't satisfied.
Yeah.
Because I always felt... like, this was very exciting, but I don't know if these people will remember whatever I've taught them within that short period.
Yeah.
So so when I did, like, the short-term trainings, I made sure that I had the same people come over and over and over again so they can continue learning different kinds of things. But then I decided this wasn't working for me. So I basically did the long-term plan before, of course... continuing with my own growth and realizing that maybe I don't need to teach this. I don't need to teach this. Maybe I can consolidate and make sure that I have a 1-year program that is quite complete.
Which,
that's what I ended up basically doing. Yeah.
And I want to hear about that a little because, I mean, just also that reflection alone of, you know, personal development, especially in spaces where there is like not in church, in trainings that a lot of NGOs and CBOs offer, the most that most will do is a 10-week program.
Yeah.
And that is what long term looks like. For some people looks like, you know. 10-week commit to every week. You probably have a thingy that you do together in the middle, and like a something that you plan together again around like graduation period. But most of them, from marriage planning to spiritual foundation to prayer to word to learning around development to peer education programs, often the most it's a 10-week program, which would last like a term of, you know, like a normal term in a high school or a campus situation. 10 to 12 weeks. But you are saying for 54 weeks or thereabout, you know, it's you commit as the leader, and they commit also as the people.
As the students,
And you are creating a manual or a curriculum to follow for this. And that's what you're seeing has long-term impact, because the touch points, these other, if I call them blitz events, that, you know, probably those are good, but they're good if they're part of a larger program.
Exactly. They only work if there was already a commitment that is long-term.
Amazing reflections that you begin to have that early, you know, from a practical experience. But it's also resource intense.
It's a lot of resource intense. But what happened is, I remember, I tried to fundraise for Lepta. I did a lot of, and I was only operations manager for 2 years. And then everyone else left. We were like 7 when we were starting Lepta, but everyone else left. So Steve was in touch because he was like the older one among us, but he was working in Kisumu, so he wasn't in Nairobi. So Lepta was in my hands, so it was about me and what I want to do with it, and what I can do and what I cannot do. So of course I became the director for Lepta at that particular time. So I was 2021 when I became the director for Lepta. And so I had to figure out the future, and this was my future. I was thinking, no, I don't want to do scholarships anymore. I don't want to do music anymore or art programs. I just want to focus on building leadership. Because and the interesting bit about that is because I realized that even with all the art and all the education, without having like a proper plan about where you're going and being able to be consistent within that particular plan, then you're never going to get there. So you might have those things, but then you're not able to get to your destination. And I thought, you know, maybe making a long-term plan where they're actually constantly doing different things throughout the year that are basically giving them confidence but also experiences will allow them to get there sooner and keep them at it longer. And that's why the program is a bit longer, because it allows them to continue practicing what they are actually learning. And we provide learning throughout the process.
So, yeah.
And during those days, we thought we needed funding, basically to give them a startup, a seed money, because they were learning about themselves, about their identity, and about... So they kind of did a strategic plan. At the beginning of the course, it's a personal strategic plan. Where they come up with their vision, their mission, and set goals. And so they kind of just have to almost come up with a company or an organization. And so I thought I needed funding for that. And so I started fundraising. So without any backing, without any knowledge, without any experience, I started drafting proposals out of nothing. And telling people, this is what we do, this is what I want funding for, specifically. And I never included salaries. In my proposals, they were never in my thought.
You're putting direct costs,
just direct costs. This is the training costs. These are meals during training. This is trainer facilitation.
And you're so putting when I'm at cost.
At cost. At cost. Like I'm going to give Steve 1,000 shillings for transport. We are using 20 bananas or 30 bananas at 5 shillings a banana. Everything was at cost. And this is what we need at the end. Like 5,000 shillings per person to go start up something. Either register a company or an organization and start it up. So our budget was like, I only did like 60,000 or 70,000 for like one
for
training cohort.
Program, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember writing these proposals to different kinds of banks, different kinds of, so I wrote to KCB, to Barclays, to Standard, two different kinds of institutions that I was aware of at that particular time. And I remember just receiving letters
of regret.
Mm. Constantly. It was like a constant heartbreak. And I thought, maybe I need to... I'm already seeing the impact of whatever I'm doing in the lives of the young people that I'm working with. They're no longer in the streets. They're no longer in the slums. They're constantly coming to learn.
Yeah.
So I can never stop doing this. So I had to think, how can I make this program almost like at zero cost? So that I can still continue doing it.
Sustainably.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to remember, I still have a girlfriend that I'm dating and I'm still making plans and still have ambitions about my own life.
Yeah.
And now that particular time, I had already moved out of Mathare. I was no longer living in Mathare, I was living in Isili. And I still wanted to do more for my own life. I thought, I don't want to stop doing Lepta, but I also need an income. And so I started learning very aggressively how to do graphic design. And fortunately, I also got very good friends who referred me or gave me business. And I started earning from designing. And so most of the time I used to use my money. So I would save some money for my future plans. I'll give some money to my mom because I still ate at home. It was way cheaper to eat at home. Because I was still living just across the road and still save for my future plans and still use that money to buy snacks and different kinds of things for my training programs.
Wow.
And that's what we did at the beginning of that whole leadership training process that we used to.
So to say that you have invested your sweat and blood and tears into the leadership programs, wouldn't be it wouldn't be an exaggeration. It's not a hyperbole. It's the truth. You have seen, you not only caught the vision of the founder's vision alongside yourself.
Yeah.
You caught that, but then you personalize it so much that you put your own resources into it to ensure that it can only run because you want the people. The kind of impact you're seeing in people is what you want to accelerate.
Exactly, and make it actually a reality.
What were the kind of numbers that you are reaching? I think the first time you mentioned through the Get to Know It program, you kind of first, in the cohort that Hilda was in, they were like 22?
They were like 22.
That was the first cohort?
That was the first cohort.
That year is 2017?
That was 2009.
Oh, 2009. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so then...
It started in 2008,
but
it ended in 2009.
All right. So the next cohort then?
The next cohort was the RF now.
Uh-huh.
So
because
now we stopped the Esther's program.
Yeah.
So now it's the Richard Fatih School of Art.
Yeah.
We are teaching only 30% of art. Everything else is leadership
and management.
That is the main the main content
actually,
for that particular program.
Yeah.
In that program we had 15.
Mm. That one I remember because you would call some people like Oscar Arigi to come and train.
Yes. We had several people also from Avuno who will offer extra help. Like I remember Kirk Franklin came to Kasarani and we had tickets for all the all the people that we had in our program and we took them to Kasarani to see Kirk Franklin.
To see it in motion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they started dancing in different kinds of forums and different kinds. So we had Sandra from Kijiji,
yes,
who was very instrumental, and she used to come to do team building like classes and exercises in our training programs. So we got a bit more
exposure and leverage for Recreation Factory.
Exactly.
So
who
that's
used to come for training. Mr. T came to train. We had so different kinds of people who used to show up for our training programs and even for our concerts.
Exactly.
The ones that were in Mathare.
Reason
we had the biggest gospel artists at that time were performing
who
in
was
this
that?
Concert. So we had Emoji.
Yeah.
We had Ekodida.
Yeah.
We had Adi Owen.
Mm.
All these people showed up for concerts. So our concerts were really, really nice and big.
The concerts, you do them annually or
we used to do two
quarterly?
Every
two
year.
Year. Yeah.
Two every year. So in August and in December.
Because
usually it's just said April is a lazy month where people are either in school studying or... So we did those concerts during August and December.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And so the artists in the RF are getting a lot of exposure themselves.
Yeah.
They are getting a lot of leadership experience, a lot of management, self-management, self-governance.
Yeah.
And you are also able, that's the second cohort of 15.
Yeah.
So they do they like clear a year? Or are you at that time still thinking three years?
So those two cohorts, they are the ones I thought I would do for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a very heartbreaking experience for myself at that particular time, but was very eye-opening also and very instrumental in how LEPTA continued progressing. Mm-hmm. I remember Steve came from Kisumu and asked me, how long have you been training these guys?
Mm-hmm.
Like RF, I had trained them for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the other group for like 2 years, and he told me, no, they have to graduate. They have to, so you can get others. I told him, no, I want to build something with these people. These are my people. I want to build something with them. There's this vision that we have, that we have to. And so he gave me like 5,000 shillings, and he told me, you have to organize a graduation immediately. So I had to like make certificates and graduate them, and they were also not really happy with it. And some of them still up until today are bitter that I ended up
graduating this
thing quite early on. I told them I have to move on to a new group.
Yeah, but yeah,
and that was like in 2010.
Okay, we'll continue right back.